thing more than half charm and sorcery, and the rest of it mere planks and driftwood, which, if he let slack the shaping spells and the binding spell upon them, would soon enough lapse and scatter and go drifting off as a little flotsam on the waves. The sail, too, woven of magic in the air, would not long stay against the wind if he slept, but would turn to a puff of wind itself. Ged's spells were cogent and potent, but when the matter on which such spells works is small, the power that keeps them working must be renewed from moment to moment, so he slept not that night. He would have gone easier and swifter as falcon or dolphin, but Ogion had advised him not to change his shape, and he knew the value of Ogion's advice. So he sailed southward under the west-going stars, and the long night passed slowly until the first day of the new year brightened all the sea. Soon after the sun rose, he saw land ahead, but he was making little way towards it. The world's wind had dropped with daybreak. He raised a light mage wind into his sail to drive him towards that land. At the sight of it, fear had come into him again, the sinking dread that urged him to turn away, to run away. And he followed that fear as a hunter follows the signs, the broad, blunt, clawed tracks of the bear that may at any moment turn on him from the thickets. For he was close now. He knew it. It was a queer-looking land that loomed up over the sea as he drew nearer and nearer. What had from afar seemed to be one sheer mountain wall was split into several long, steep ridges, separate isles, perhaps, between which the sea ran in narrow sounds or channels. Ged had pored over many charts and maps in the tower of the Master Namer on Roke, but those had been mostly of the archipelago and the inner seas. And he was out of the East Reach now, and did not know what this island might be, nor had he much thought for that. It was fear that lay ahead of him, that lurked hiding from him or waiting for him among the slopes and forests of the island, and straight for it he steered. And now the dark forest-crowned cliffs gloomed and towered high over his boat, and spray from the waves that broke against the rocky headlands blew, spattering against his sail as the mage wind bore him between two great capes into a sound, a sea lane that ran on before him deep into the island, no wider than the length of two galleys. The sea, confined, was restless and fretted at the steep shores. There were no beaches, for the cliffs dropped straight down into the water that lay darkened by the cold reflection of their heights. It was windless and very silent. The shadow had tricked him out onto the moors in Oskil, and tricked him in the mist onto the rocks, and now would there be a third trick? Had he driven the thing here, or had it drawn him here into a trap? He didn't know. He knew only the torment of dread and the certainty that he must go ahead and do what he had set out to do, hunt down the evil, follow his terror to its source. Very cautiously he steered, watching before him and behind him and up and down the cliffs on either hand. He had left the sunlight of the new day behind him on the open sea. All was dark here. The opening between the headlands seemed a remote, bright gateway when he glanced back. The cliffs loomed higher and ever higher overhead as he approached the mountain route from which they sprang, and the lane of water grew narrower. He peered ahead into the dark cleft and left and right, up the great cavern-pocked, boulder-tumbled slopes where trees crouched with their roots half in air. Nothing moved. Now he was coming to the end of the inlet. A high, blank, wrinkled mass of rock against which, narrow to the width of a little creek, the last sea waves lapped feebly. Fallen boulders and rotten trunks and the roots of gnarled trees left only a tight way to steer. A trap. A dark trap under the roots of the silent mountain, and he was in the trap. Nothing moved before him or above him. All was deathly still. He could go no further. He turned the boat around, working her carefully round with spell and with makeshift oar, lest she knock up against the underwater rocks or be entangled in the outreaching roots and branches, till she faced outward again. and he was about to raise up a wind to take him back as he had come, when suddenly the words of the spell froze on his lips, and his heart went cold within him. He looked back over his shoulder. The shadow stood behind him in the boat. Had he lost one instant, he had been lost. But he was ready, and lunged to seize and hold the thing which wavered and trembled there within arm's reach. No wizardry would serve him now, but only his own flesh, his life itself against the unliving. He spoke no word, but attacked, and the boat plunged and pitched from his sudden turn and lunge, and a pain ran up his arms into his breast, taking away his breath, and an icy cold filled him, and he was blinded. Yet in his hands that seized the shadow there was nothing. Darkness. Air. He stumbled forward, catching the mast to stay his fall, and light came shooting back into his eyes. He saw the shadow shudder away from him and shrink together and then stretch hugely up over him, over the sail for an instant, and then, like black smoke on the wind, it recoiled and fled, formless, down the water towards the bright gate between the cliffs. Ged sank to his knees. The little spell-patched boat pitched again, rocked itself to stillness, drifting on the uneasy waves. He crouched in it, numb, unthinking, struggling to draw breath, until at last cold water welling under his hands warned him that he must see to his boat, for the spells binding it were growing weak. He stood up, holding onto the staff that made the mast, and rewove the binding spell as best he could. He was chilled and weary. His hands and arms ached sorely, and there was no power in him. He wished he might lie down there, in that dark place where sea and mountain met, and sleep on the restless rocking water. He could not tell if this weariness were a sorcery laid on him by the shadow as it fled, or came of the bitter coldness of its touch, or was from mere hunger.